Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Maria DeMars.
And joining us today is our guest, who is a charter school founder, educator, community worker. I guess he will get a little bit more into himself, and not necessarily into him. He'll get a little bit more into his qualifications, what he does, and why we think he is very much more than ordinary, and why we asked him to be on here. Our guest today is Harry Grammer.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So talk a little bit about what you do. You founded New Earth Charter School, and that kind of goes into a whole bunch of different things that we're going to talk about. But can you talk a little bit about what you do?
So what we do, we're an organization. New Earth Organization is an arts and education mentorship-based organization that works with formerly incarcerated youth between the ages of 13 and 24. And we provide programs and services for the young people who are usually stuck inside of a school-to-prison pipeline. And our job and what we feel we're responsible for is to help them to get themselves out of that pipeline, plug that pipeline, give opportunities where there usually isn't any to young people who we think have promise.
And there's about a million different things that we want to talk about. But first, I guess the question is, how did you get started on that? Where did that come from? What's your background?
I like to say sometimes I was one of these young people. I grew up in more of a lower middle class income family. Grew up on the streets, was involved in gangs. I was a teenage father like many of them. I have spent 5 years on juvenile probation, and I felt that that was what happens. Most of the young people that are around me, most of my friends, by the time we were 13, 14 years old, we were all getting locked up, being arrested for acting out, whether it be, you know, in school or in the streets. So I just thought that was the norm. And come to realize right around 18 years old when I had my son, I realized that I didn't want to live that life. I didn't want that for my son. I didn't want him to see his father incarcerated and begin to think different. And there were some mentors that came into my life at that time. And so now working with the young people that we work with now that are incarcerated, I feel mentorship is key. I think that having someone in their life, having someone that's going to be there for them to catch them when they're slipping and going down the wrong road is very important, because I know if I didn't have folks in my life at that time, I would have gone off into another place. So as I got older, I began to live for my son and live for my family, and I began to work. And work was another thing that pulled me out of the streets. I was working two jobs, one at a grocery store, another one working a full-time job at a warehouse facility, driving a forklift while I was going to college full-time. And so I really dedicated to that, and I saw that I was earning back some dignity in my life at that time by doing things and earning an honest paycheck instead of selling any drugs or anything like that. I was able to put money in the bank, and I felt good about myself. When I was 21 years old, I bought my first house, and it wasn't renting my first house. I bought my first house, and that really made me feel well. And went to corporate, graduated from college, went to corporate, and realized this wasn't for me. I realized there was something missing. There was something I wanted to do. I wanted to give back to the community. I wanted to give back to those that were like me at that time. And at that time, I was also doing some self-reflection. I was about 26 years old. I'm just getting into the arts for the first time in my life. And I realized that this is something that's healing me. Maybe it's something that can heal others at the same time. And went through a tough self-discovery two-year period of my life. And out of that came the design and the desire to create this organization. And started with the basis of poetry. And opened up a small open mic in my neighborhood, invited folks that were in my neighborhood to come down and share stories they would not normally share, poetry, song, dance, and it became very popular. And from that, we had our first board to create this organization called New Earth, and we were all creatives, and we created our flow program, which got picked up by a juvenile facility here in Los Angeles, detention camp. And we didn't realize that poetry itself was going to be such a popular thing for kids. But realizing there wasn't anything like that or any way in which they could express themselves or at least talk about some of their issues there while being incarcerated became a place where fresh water flowing through a dry place. They began to really go deep and talk about things, and we gave them a really safe space to express, and then we turned it into performance, and they were able to perform for their other students or the other inmates at, inside of the space. So we kind of create our own open mic setting inside of juvenile detention, and it began to blow up. And then we began to songwrite from those poems and then make music, and we got musicians involved. And so they were going home with CDs of their writings after learning poetry, learning songwriting, learning how to make music. They were going home with this creation of expressing themselves in ways they'd never had before. And that was sort of the launch of the entire organization. And from there, we sort of built what we have today into our charter school and all the other programs. We service about 18 different facilities throughout Los Angeles County right now, and about 700 youth per week throughout LA County, and also in Orange County as well, too, with different programming that we have. And the charter school is really a response to going to too many funerals, seeing kids back inside and kids coming back. The recidivism rate was 80-90% at that time. So 2 months later, I'll see someone come back that was here 2 months earlier. It was just getting to a point where I said, you know, we need more services out in the community as well. They need to have one-stop shops, not a school here, therapy there, a, you know, probation office over here, or a job over there. How can we create something to where they can go to one place and get it all, and they'd have more of a likelihood of staying out? And that was how we developed our charter school.
Well, and I find it really interesting. I went to your school, and your school is not in South LA. It's in a fairly nice area of Culver City, sort of corporate. So can you talk a little bit about deciding where you put your school and why you did that?
Absolutely. So it took us about 2 years to decide to put it there. And what I mean by decide, we couldn't find a new thing in that area that was affordable, for one, until we found this place. But the reason why we put it there was because most of the young people that are being released out of juvenile detention are going to various parts of LA County. Some are going back to the Valley, San Pedro, Long Beach, South Central LA, some back to the West Side. So we wanted to have a centralized location where, for the most part, most of them could get to once we opened this space. We also, number two, is that we tried a small center in South Central LA at one point, and we had a hard time getting young people there because of gang territories. We had young people that wouldn't come because they were afraid that they would get banged on. And so they did not want to attend. So we saw that that was going to be really hard to open something in that area or in those areas. And another thing is that we also thought it'd be great to have something right at the edge of the inner city where they can come to, where they can be exposed to the rest of the world. I'm a true believer of stepping outside the bubble, stepping outside the box. So this gives them an opportunity to get off their block, get out of their neighborhoods, which is very familiar, which could be triggers on various levels for behavior and being reincarcerated, to help them to see there's a bigger world out there. This is how folks sort of behave and act inside of a business world. So we chose a business center because we wanted them to be exposed to the business world as well. So it was a mix of different things that helped us to decide where to place the center.
And do you work with those businesses in the community around you? Like, do they come in as mentors, or do you place youth there as interns?
You know, that's interesting. I really think that the businesses around us, they may need to step outside the box too sometimes. We've invited folks in that business park to collaborate, to come by, to visit. Last year we did twice, Know Your Neighbor open house for those inside of our business park community. And you know, we had maybe one or two businesses show up to that out of the, I think, 20, 25 businesses that are in that park. Something that I think that needs to be learned by the public is who these young people really are. I think just off of first glance, you can look at some of the young people that we work with and misunderstand them. You see an image, and this is an image that may have been perpetuated by the media, or an image that may have been put into our thoughts as someone fearful. If you see a young man, and we teach these things too, but if their pants are sagging, or they look like they got tattoos in their necks and their arms, they look like it could be some trouble. But if you get to know these young people, they're young people that are, that's part of their culture. You know, and it's beyond that. So our business park, I think, we've had some issues with that business park in some ways, because people are still trying to, I believe, either understand who the young people are or are trying to maintain the stereotype.
Well, I have one more question before I start. I quit monopolizing them all and let Marie ask hers. But not even a question. I was just an offer. I know when I was young, I had no idea what people on the 12th floor buildings in Santa Monica did. I would look at these people coming out of their business suits and just have no idea. So if you have any youth that you would like to like job shadow for a day, we have software developers. We have our sound engineer, Jonah, sitting there, who I'm sure would be happy to do it. We have a graphic designer. We have our office manager. Any of us would be happy if they want to come in for a day and just hang out, see what we do, find out how you make games, find out about the different jobs. Just let us know. You know where we are. You got my number. We'd be happy to.
We'll set that up. I love that. Thank you, Anne-Maria.
Along those lines, and this is something that we've talked about a lot, is our games, people say, well, what we're making for kids initially was the focus was low-income kids, kids underperforming, kids from minority communities, not the standard kid that people are creating educational technology for. And a lot of times we talk a lot about working with kids, and there's a lot of people want to work with kids and make a difference, but a lot of times they're talking about five-year-old preschoolers who are drawing you pictures with hearts, not necessarily kids who have been recently incarcerated. But why... This is probably a very obvious question for you, but I think a lot of people don't necessarily. Why is it so important to be going after the kids that aren't cute and sweet and will probably tell you things that I wouldn't say on this podcast, you know? But I would. Yeah, she would. I always have a one swear rule quota that I try and hold her to. But why is it so important to be working with those kids and focusing on those kids? Because I think one of the things we talk a lot about too is in tech, it's this weird thing, but people say, well, you know, we've got to start teaching them to code at 4. And if not, well, what happens when they're in high school? You know, there's this kind of lapse that people seem to be when they're looking at developing the next generation. And it seems like you're really focusing on that important part so they don't get dropped through the cracks.
Well, I think partially why they're in the cracks is because folks have misunderstood them in the first place. They've misunderstood the system itself. They don't understand. They're uneducated about the system and why some of those young people are there. And so the young people who are the cute and cuddly kids are not getting the services. And even the ones who aren't cute and cuddly, whatever that means, they can use more services too. But I focus on these young people because there's a larger game out there than most of us know about when it comes to juvenile incarceration. It's a very lucrative system. I don't want to lead in with that, but it is the truth. Right now, it costs $233,000 to incarcerate a young person in Los Angeles County. Okay, $233,000 of taxpayer money. On top of that, there's an 80 to 85% recidivism rate. So meaning a young person is released from incarceration. Within 2 to 6 months, they're brought back in. What they're usually brought back in 80% of the time is on what's called a status offense. A status offense is not a new crime. It's not because they went and robbed a house or they broke into a car or they hurt someone. It's because they missed a court appointment or they weren't going to school or they were doing something that violated their terms of probation given by the judge. That's usually why young people are going back into jail. I was just sitting with a young man on Tuesday night in one of our classes. He's brand new. I said, why are you here? He says, well, I asked him, how long are you here for? He said, I'm here for 9 months. I said, what are you here for? He's like, I didn't go to school, man. And it was his first time being incarcerated. He was on probation before, but because he wasn't going to school, they gave him 9 months to sit inside of a jail. Now, there should be other services out there besides being incarcerated. You know, when young people are incarcerated, you know, when you're transported from place to place, whether it be on medical leave from the detention center, whether it be anywhere else, wherever you're going to go and you're being transported, you're shackled at the feet. Now, imagine being shackled and handcuffed because you missed school and you're 14 years old, because you weren't going to school for whatever reasons. No one ever asked the question, why weren't you going to school? No one ever talks about kids that are being bullied left and right. No one's ever asked about the parent who didn't come home last night and then came in at 5 a.m. that they have to take care of because they partied all night. People don't talk about that, but the young person missed school, so now they're in shackles. What kind of trauma does that create for these young people when you're now a criminal at 14 because you didn't go to school? And this happens all the time. It happens every day. I'm inside these places with these kids almost every single day. I spend more time in the jails than I do actually at my charter school. So that's the reason why I think we should pay attention, because we need to understand really what's really going on. Why are they not getting the services in the first place, even in the community? Why are services and arts programs and education programs not being funded inside of the inner city to have kids go out and be out on the streets in the first place to get on probation and then from probation become part of a system that's going to swallow them up and then they become an adult offender somewhere down the line because back when they were 14, they're in shackles and now they believe they're really a criminal, right? So That's why these services are important and why we should be paying attention, especially when Los Angeles County is the largest juvenile justice department than anywhere else on the planet. There's nowhere else in all of the world that has a larger juvenile justice system than Los Angeles County. So that's why I focus a lot of my work here, because we have a real problem here and I want to see it solved.
Well, and I think I can speak from personal experience when it comes to, you know, being that kid who is having problems in school and having problems at home, and instead of getting any help, you get thrown into juvie and locked up and shackled. And I think maybe some of those hardcore lock them up, teach them who's boss people think that the result will be the kid will be sorry and they'll act differently. But I can say in my case, and I think I was pretty typical, the result was that I just thought, fuck those people. I'm not doing anything they say. Nobody's going to make me. I'm not doing anything. And so I think often, you know, you talked about a school to prison pipeline, but more often it's a school dropout to prison pipeline. I think the kids who graduate from school and go on to college have a far, far better prognosis than the kids who drop out. But they drop out because basically no one wants to go to a school where no one cares about them, where often, at least in many of the schools where I go, the facilities are terrible. There's tiles falling out of the walls. The bathrooms are disgusting. And all of that sends a message that we don't really care about you. And some of the teachers are wonderful. Oh my God, they deserve a medal. But they're pushing water uphill. They don't have computers. Like, we make computer games. And I can't tell you the number of schools I've gone to that don't have computers. They had computers. They got stolen. Supposedly the district told them they had computers, but when they asked for them to use in their classroom, oh, we don't have them. So we put all the blame on these kids. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but we don't really offer that much in the way of services or support or a hand out to help them turn around.
No, we don't. And you know what's really interesting is that I go to a lot of schools in the city and they don't have those resources that you talk about. But you go into all of the juvenile detention facilities, they've got MacBook Pros, they've got top level equipment inside. They've got starboards and smartboards, and they're barely using it. I was in a facility last week and I was back in their storage room looking for some supplies. There were three 3D printers collecting dust, not being used inside the entire facility. And I'm like, how many other schools out in the city could use a 3D printer or a mini Mac or any other piece of equipment? We see where our priorities are. We see that our priorities, when I say ours, I'm not part of that hour, but you see where the county's or the state's priorities are is in incarceration. And that's where they put their money. And I see this all the time. Kids get really comfortable. And I'm there in a classroom and, you know, you'll see a few kids throw their feet up on the desk and they're leaning back in their chair and they're relaxing. But I tell them all the time, you guys are getting just way too comfortable. I mean, that's what the system wants, is for you to think that this place is a great place to be. We need to be thinking about how to fix up our communities, not have a place where you're going to want to come back to over and over and over again because the food is good and you get three meals a day that are hot and you've got computers and Macs. We as a whole, as a public, should be looking at ways in which to provide that for those young people, so when they're not there, they receive that, so they're not trying to get back in there with top-notch high-tech equipment. But I also do not believe in them not having any resources inside either. I'm glad that those things are there. I just wish they were also distributed out in the community.
We'll be right back. Mother's Day is coming up. Have your gift ready? Well, if you don't, we have the perfect gift for her. This Mother's Day, donate games in your mom's name. Give her a thoughtful gift by donating our games and supporting a school, classroom, or even an individual student. For more information, go to 7GenerationGames.com/buy.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by 7 Generation Games. I'm still Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Maria DeMars.
And we still have with us
Harry Grammer.
So we were talking just a little bit over the break about kind of some of the work that Harry's doing with his kids. And then Anne-Maria said, stop everything you're saying because I have something to say when we come back live. So, Anne-Maria, take it away.
Well, Harry was saying how they were starting a tech hub and how they run the live action cameras on explore.org. And he was looking for ideas for expanding beyond that to coding and to other areas to get kids jobs. And he just hit onto one of my biggest sore spots, or soapboxes, some might say, where people say, oh, we're teaching kids to code. And then you look and they've got something like, well, you move this tab over here and it's an if-then statement. So no, that's not it. So what I have always thought would be a great idea is kids like games. And most kids, you know, 95%, and I'm not making that number up, of kids in that age group that Harry deals with play video games on their phone, on their computer. So whenever anybody asks me, how do you learn to code, or how do you learn about graphic design, or how do you learn about multimedia, I always say the same thing. Get a project that you really want to do, and then you'll figure it out. Because nothing beats that hands-on experience. And when you go and interview for a job, these days, everybody's claiming to have expertise. So one of the first things people are going to say at a legit company is, give me some examples of something you did. Let me see your work. So I would suggest working with them in game development. Have them come up with an idea for a game and actually work on coding that. And even, ideally, you would get a group of people together, because you can't make a decent game by yourself. Because you need sound, you need art, animation, you need coding. And get them somebody to come up and kind of put it all together as the project manager, and then the other people to do the pieces of it. I think that would be a fabulous project, and your students would not only learn to code or to do animation, sound, but they'd also learn those really important soft skills that, when you were talking about poetry, I was just thinking, how do you get around that thing where you've got these 13, 16-year-old kids that are trying to be hard, and somebody says something, they've got to make some smart-ass remark, and then there's a fight. They learn to actually work together on things. So that's my idea for what I would do for building
tech. That'd
be
great. And I think that's something that the kids would latch on to in a second. They're creatives. They really are. When they were working with us inside, and when they were working on poetry, the poetry was there to really just soften them up a little bit, so then they can be open to other ways to express themselves. And so I think they would latch onto that very well. And we've always had a vision, because we're right next to the Silicon Beach area where you've got everybody posted up there. And helping these young people to have the skills and to be able to build up their resume, or in such a way that they could go to one of these places and possibly get an internship or a job where they can get an in, or they can create their own games, right? And be able to market their own games. That'd be the ultimate vision for something like this.
You mentioned briefly your poetry program, I guess, and you talked a little bit about the beginning, but can you tell us a little bit more what it is, what you do with the kid?
So, inside or?
Both, especially because it seems like it's something that, again, it's not something that stops. It's this idea of both using poetry to build up other skills and, like I said, use it with kids who are incarcerated, and then also you're using it at your school, correct?
Right, yes. So our main program is called FLOW, stands for the Fluent Love of Words. It is a poetry writing, but it's more than that. It's a poetry turned songwriting turned music program. So poetry is just where it starts. And then they build it up and they build off of their poetry to make songs. And we also have a gardening program. Getting kids out of the dorms, getting kids, you know, out of the classrooms, these stuffy classrooms that are inside of the detention facilities, and having them get their hands in the soil, grow their own food. They love the garden. I gotta say that I think most of them may love the garden more than they do writing poetry. They love growing food, watching tomatoes grow, eating food from the earth. They love it. So we grow organic gardens in some facilities as well. But what we do that's really unique is that separates us from other organizations is that when a young person is usually in any other situation released from detention, there's a warm handoff in a referral process where that young person is sent to a substance abuse program over here or to a school over there because they can't go back to their district school, or there's warm handoff to job readiness program. And what we do that's different is that when that young person is incarcerated, they meet us at the front door. They meet us day one. So we begin the transition process before they're even getting ready for transition. So we're building relationships. And what we've learned through our own research, and just it's obvious, is that once we built the relationship, and as that relationship is sustained, they're less likely to get back into trouble. They're less likely to fall through the cracks because there's someone there that they're familiar with. They're familiar with the culture because our organization doesn't change from the time that they're inside to when they arrive at our center. So there's this continuity that's kept from the day they get there, when most kids arrive in a jail facility and they're afraid. They're afraid of what other kids are going to do to them. They're afraid of the probation staff that's there, they're just in this oblivious place of like, what's going to happen to me? And we're there to say, hey, we're good. Come be in our class. It's a safe space. We share in this class. And it's about creativity. It's not therapy, which it's not. It can be therapeutic, but it's not therapy class. And they have fun and they get to know other young people inside. So once that's established, we begin the process. So we start working with the probation department, with the Department of Mental Health that's there, with the Los Angeles County Office of Education, LACO, in creating a transition plan for that young person for when they leave. There's this crossover. So I believe the question was, what makes it different? Like, how is this impactful? Well, it's the relationship. It all comes down to the right people in the right place, guiding the process along and sustaining the process once the young person returns back to the community. And poetry and arts are at the base of it. That never changes. I think that creative spark we continuously kick up each time.
Math and science, but especially math, is one of those things that kids that are incarcerated, kids from low-income communities, they are several years behind. And it is hard because math isn't something like literature where you didn't read Catcher in the Rye, oh well. So how do you work with those kids? What do you do to help bring them up? Because, I mean, that's a real challenge too. They're coming into your school. They're several years behind. You're dealing with all of these things. You know, you're dealing with therapy and education and all these issues. How do you help these kids bring up math scores? And what do you do on that front? Because it's hard if they're so far behind.
Well, I think the key word is engagement. It's all about keeping them engaged by any means necessary. What we do is that we're a project-based learning facility. So what that means is that we help the young people develop projects in the classroom that are going to feed into their math and their science and their history and their social studies. And at the same time, there's a lot of reflection that goes into creating these projects. So, for example, if we're working on World War II, right? That's a history project that we're working on. We're going to help them to relate World War II to what's happening in their world back at home. We're always connecting their life out of the facility or outside of the school back to the material, because that way we can keep them engaged more, keep them interested more. That's been really, really, really helpful with us. Inside of the camp facilities, they implemented about 3 years ago. And when I say camp, I mean detention camp. Not a Snoopy camp. That's I always have to correct myself. So they implemented a really interesting curriculum there about 3 years ago called the Road to Success Academy, which is a project-based learning, which really deals with trauma-informed material, really sensitive material that's going to help them to reflect, but at the same time not trigger any other bots for them that's going to have them react and out behaviorally. So I think the word I'm looking for here is engaged. Inside RTSA, the Road to Success Academy, that engages young people when you can incorporate their own lives into the material. And the same thing in our school, we do the same thing there too. So, and that also comes back to the congruency of having something that's familiar when they get out that they had on the inside. We try to mirror some of the things that work back inside of our school as well, because it helps them to feel at home.
And I think that practical context part is so important, because that's what we talk about a lot in our games, is the math problems in the games relate to the context. So you have 160 miles to go, and you have 8 days to get there, and you have how much should you go each day if you're not going to run out of supplies. So that kind of idea of when they see that there's some application to it, to real life, we've seen, and sounds like you have too, that it just clicks more. It's not, I have to learn this because someone will run up to me and quiz me on times tables, or because someone tells me I have to, but to see there's real practical applications of what they're learning.
And try to bring in popular culture as much as possible into what they're learning. Where are kids when they're not in front of you? They're in their phones, right? They're on social media. They're talking about music. They're talking about the latest artist out there. They're talking about the movies and the actors. And the more we try to step into their world to teach them things that are valuable, that they're going to need as they move forward in life, and we're stepping into their world to do it and not forcing them to step into our world, we're going to be more successful.
And I can't believe I'm saying this, because I'm much more a math person, computer science, coding than humanities. But I do think there's also something to be said for bringing into their world some of the historical perspective, because we can learn a lot from history. And Jose Gonzalez, who is one of the consultants on our games, likes to say that history isn't just names and dates. It's how people lived. It's what people cared about. It's how people died. So I think there's also a benefit of using, whether it's games or poetry or whatever you do, videos, to bring in lessons from the past. we do games based on Native American history and talk about perseverance and how if you were a hunter going out, you didn't look and say, oh my God, that buffalo is so big, I think I'll just go sit back in the teepee. You persevered and you had courage and you got up and you went and you did difficult things. And that's how now, if you want to be a brave person, if you want to be respected, you have to do difficult things, even if it's solving algebra problems. And so I think there are ways to bring in not just who you watched on TV or who the biggest YouTube star is, but then also where you're from, because we're all from somewhere.
And I have one last question for you before I think we get to our tip segment. Hearing you talk, you know, and it kind of brings me back to being an entrepreneur. There's days where it's really exciting and you're really excited about it. And then there's days when you're saying, oh my God, what am I doing? The ups and downs. And you find what drives you and you figure out, okay, I feel like I'm doing this because. What is it that drives you? Because I'm sure not every day is kids coming up every minute saying, thanks so much, you've changed everything for me. I'm sure that happens a lot, but I'm sure there's a lot of days where you just encounter really, really difficult moments and challenges. And what keeps you persevering through those?
What keeps me going is that I've seen a lot doing this work. I've seen a lot of pain in with the youth. I've cried with the youth. I think what keeps me going is that there's a lot of work to be done here. And I feel like I'm on. I feel like I'm in my purpose. I really do. Like, I'm really there. There was definitely a moment where that clicked for me because I wasn't sure. And about 7-8 years ago doing this work, there was something that said, wow, you're in your purpose now. Like, I couldn't see myself doing anything else. And that's when you know you're in your purpose because you look around, you're like, I'd rather not be doing anything else. There's just that moment. And it's because I see the whole picture. I see that there's hope and there's promise on the other side of this system being redesigned or even dismantled to a point to where it's fair eventually, to where young people aren't just getting picked up off the street for whatever because we've got to pay some bills in LA County, right? So I feel hopeful and I feel like there's enough other voices out there that can make something really shift. And if we can make it shift here in Los Angeles County, imagine what we can do anywhere else. Like I said, this is the largest, you know, detention probation system in the world for juveniles. If we can shift something here, we can do something in Chicago. We can do something in New York. We can do something in Brazil. There's so many other opportunities for us to stop incarcerating our children. So I'm going to keep going as long as I can. And when I say can, I mean last breath even, to be a voice for young people not being incarcerated and healing the community to a point to where we don't lead our young people to a place of incarceration. Will that ever happen one day? I don't know, but I'm going to push it. So that's what wakes me up in the morning. That's what puts my feet on the ground.
We'll be right back.
You can be too successful.
How so?
Our latest games have parents suggesting we get endorsements from YouTube celebrities, have professional gamers stream us on Twitch. They point out where we aren't the virtual reality level of Call of Duty.
Yet.
The point is, our games are so much more, well, game-like than the average educational games that people forget that what you really should be comparing these games to are math worksheets.
Yeah, I mean, you can have your kids sit down and do math workbooks for 20 minutes, if you can even get them to do that. Or you can let them play Fish Lake, which they'll probably ask you to let them keep playing after 20 minutes.
Or you can play yourself. You know you are never going to pick up one of those workbooks again for the rest of your life. Still, do you remember how to reduce fractions to lowest terms, multiply and divide fractions?
If not, play Fish Lake before Mia or Connor or Aiden or Joe gets home from school and asks for your help with their homework. Welcome back to our third and final and usually best segment of More Than Ordinary presented by Seven Generation Games. In case you missed it the first few times, I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne Maria DeMars, and no pressure on Harry, but now Maria set you up that you have to be even better than you were okay. Previously.
Yeah, you know, like we always say, the tip is advice. Anne Maria loves to give advice, solicited and unsolicited, but just kind of things that you either wish you knew or things you find yourself saying all of the time. And it can be specific to the kids you work with. It can be just, you know, to the public, what you wish they would know, to the whole world. Whatever you think would be great, what's one tip that you have?
I had a mentor that told me once, he said, be consistently consistent and persistently persistent, and you watch your dreams come to pass. And when he told me that, when I was in my early 20s, I didn't believe him. I thought I had some small success in my life because I was able to pull myself up. But I hadn't seen what was truly possible in my future yet. And that's the best piece of advice I can give anybody. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Whatever your dream is, if it's a dream and it lives inside of you, keep it going. Because eventually, this may sound really crazy and funny, eventually, I believe, unless something comes in and cuts it off completely, I believe that you will live out that dream and whatever it is. And so, and I've watched myself do it. What's kept me going all these years is because I didn't give up. Were there times that I wanted to give up? Yes. When I'm walking out of a juvenile detention facility 12 years ago and I'm the last one walking out the door and it's 9 o'clock at night and I had been there from 7 o'clock in the morning and I do that every night and I'm dragging my equipment along with me and I'm wondering why there aren't more people walking out of this building. I heard a voice inside of me says, just keep going. Just keep going. There's something that's going to come out of this. There's something that's going to come out of you pushing and pushing and pushing for these kids. And I watched over the years that I think what was built was an integrity around the work, the commitment around the work. People saw that the commitment and integrity was helped to build trust between relationships because I was consistent. And so consistently consistent, persistently persistent. I say that to any entrepreneur out there that's looking to start something and they're really passionate and they see that whatever they're imagining up is something that can change the world. Do it. I say that to any young person out there who is incarcerated, who is feeling hopeless and feel like he's drowning and there's no hope around you. Don't give up. Find a mentor. Find a mentor. Find someone that can give you some advice, that can call you out when you feel like you're going down the wrong path. Find a mentor and latch that mentor and continue to see the best in yourself. And I say that to anyone out there that's in probation and law enforcement, you know, that is out there that sees that there is good for the community and you see that we can get past all of this and get to some real fairness around the judicial system. Continue to speak up. Continue to be that voice where there is none and continue to just give hope back to the community. Continue to be there and listen to the community when they have something to say. So being persistently persistent and consistently consistent is my tip for the day.
And I don't think we can end it any better than that. So thank you so much to everybody listening. And Harry, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7GenerationGames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, GenerationGames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7GenerationGames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.